going back to the Senate.
And of course, there's Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin is, she's in two elections, or was in two elections yesterday. In one election, which was a special election to fill the congressional seat of Don Young, a longtime Alaska congressman who passed away, she has come through in, it's a ranked choice election. She's come through second to a woman named Mary Peltola, who has run a very good, very strong campaign as a Democrat. But there is another Republican in that ranked choice vote, a guy named Nick Begich. His votes are likely to be redistributed more to Palin than to the Democrat. And so there's a decent chance that, that Palin will win, but not a certainty here. And so we've got to watch how that ranked choice redistribution goes. That may take a couple weeks. The other thing, the second race that Palin was in is for November. She's one of the top four. So is the Democrat we spoke about. So is Nick Begich. And so we're going to do this all over again in November with ranked choice. I think the real takeaway here, though, is that there was a very substantial vote for a progressive Democrat in Alaska. And that, you know, we should always look at these states that, that people often write off as, you know, all Republican, and these are only looking at the Republican races. The fact of the matter is that a progressive Democrat did very, very well in Alaska last night.
John Nichols, very quickly, go across the country to Pennsylvania, the Senate race that could determine the balance of the Senate, Mehmet Oz versus Fetterman, who just survived a very serious health challenge. So you have the cardiologist versus the heart patient. He has been mocked, that is, Mehmet Oz, for going into a grocery store, naming it wrong, and talking about he was getting ingredients for crudité for his wife.
It's an incredible race. Look, the bottom line is this: John Fetterman, who has had some health challenges, is back on the trail. He had a huge rally the other day in Erie, where they opened up with AC/DC's "Back in Black" blaring and the crowd cheering. And the fact of the matter is that Fetterman is running a very deep grassroots Pennsylvania campaign. Looks to be well ahead in the polls. And Dr. Oz, who lived in New Jersey before he got into this race,
we have 10
seconds.
He
seems to keep on stumbling. He looks like a candidate that Trump put ahead into the final race, but not somebody that Trump can get elected.
John Nichols, we want to thank you for being with us, the nation's national affairs correspondent. We'll link to your piece. I hope Liz Cheney wins, but I couldn't vote for her. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Wear a mask. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH. Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 8:01. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
You're slick, you investors in hate, you Saddams and you Bushes, you Bin Ladens and snakes, you billionaire bullies, you're a globalized curse. You put war on the masses and then you clean out the purse. And that's how it's done, war after war. You old feudal parasites, you just sacrifice the poor. You got the cutting edge weapons, but your scam's still the same as it's been since the Romans. Yo, it's the Patriot game. Yo, that's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. You twisters of language, you creeps of disguise. Yeah, disinformation, it's like worms in your eyes. You privileged bankers, you gambler thieves, you profit on war. You think it's just less money in peace. So that's how it's done. Time after time, country after country, and crime after crime. You pretend it's religion, like there's no one to blame for the dead and impoverished, in your little patriot game. Honey, that's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket. You got the world's greatest power, and you team up with thugs.
Indeed, that's the war racket, and we're going to be talking about that again today. That song. Oh, by the way, I am Paul Rowan. Good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio coming at you at Inner Southeast Portland Studios here. And that was, of course, Buffy St. Marie. That is such a powerful song, and that is sort of becoming our de facto theme music for this program, which is focusing quite a bit recently and will be into the future on the war and climate change, the influence of the military. And as more voices speak out against the military's outsized role in destabilizing our Earth's climate, Veterans for Peace members stepped up with an action 2 weeks ago protesting just that. Today's guests will be talking about that action and their activism against war and climate change. I will introduce them in just a moment. I've been reaching out to people on this issue, getting in touch with something of a network around the world working on this, and I'm trying to get in communication with as many as possible, and I wrote an email to one of them, and I wrote this: militarization got us into this situation through imperial and colonial expansion, and out of them, the development of industrial capitalism, with the consequent exponential increase in machines and fossil fuel use. Militaries secure access to fossil fuels and other key industrial resources. Militaries are the crucible for the development of new industrial processes and products, notably weaponry, to keep the whole thing escalating. Militaries use a giant share of fossil fuels and other resources. Militaries repress popular struggles and campaigns for social and environmental justice. Militaries foment conflicts and wars that prevent us from solving the ever-increasing and intersecting crises. We need to unite grassroots citizens' movements, struggles, and organizations to push for a global framework for demilitarization. Well, that's my two cents, and we're going to hear what Jim Ryan, a retired research geologist and an adjunct professor in the Department of Environmental Science and Geology at Wayne State University, who was arrested at the Veterans for Peace action. He served in the U.S. Army in West Germany from 1970 to 1973 and joined Veterans for Peace in 2005 to protest the U.S. war in Iraq. After a career researching marine, environmental, and petroleum geology, Jim returned to his hometown of Detroit, Michigan in 2016. Since 2020, he's been active with Veterans for Peace's Climate Crisis and Militarism Project. Our other guest, Janet Wheel, is a longtime peace activist and an associate member of Portland Veterans for Peace. She served on the national staff of Code Pink for several years and is now also on the Veterans for Peace's Climate Crisis and Militarism Project. She's also active with the local chapter of Extinction Rebellion, editing their bi-monthly newsletter and their blog. And they're both with us by telephone. So good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having us on.
You're quite welcome. And good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Paul. Great statement.
Thank you. And maybe you can expound on that as well as we go on. First, I'd like to turn to Jim, who was at that protest. And it was just this incredible synchronicity. As I said, I've been thinking and thinking and talking about this on my show and with other people, and then boom, people are actually taking direct action. So tell us about what led up to your participation in that action and what that was all about.
So as a geologist, I mean, I've been examining the rock record for over 30 years. So I've seen many climate changes in the rock record. And so I knew this is, something that I've been, is my audio okay?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. So I've been arguing with my fellow petroleum geologists that, you know, why aren't you recognizing climate change? And I wrote a couple of papers, and that didn't go anywhere. And then I work with a group called Citizens Climate Lobby, and I've been to Washington 7 times lobbying. That didn't go anywhere. So I was happy to find the Climate Crisis and Militarism Project and really explore, since I'm a veteran, that was an aspect that I wanted to do. And I just felt that, you know, even with the Inflation Reduction Act, we still need to do more, still throwing money at the military. We should be throwing money at the climate crisis instead. The Inflation Reduction Act is spending on climate about 1/20 of what it's spending on, you know, we're spending on the military. And that I felt that the only way to get attention is to join my fellow veterans and get out in the street and protest.
Well, before I turn to Janet, so talk a little bit about the history of Veterans for Peace and this, and is this climate change and militarism project something kind of new, or is that sort of within the, you know, what the VFP has been fighting for since, I guess, 1985?
Well, Woody Powell started, among others, started an environmental group, which sort of within Veterans for Peace. And we sort of coupled onto that, but that we've only been doing this for a couple of years. We had a meeting before the pandemic where there were discussions about climate change, but we really didn't come together as a formal group until about 2 years ago. So we have, you know, we're a formal project within Veterans for Peace. And so, like, we have a budget and we have meetings to, you know, do various, you know, various initiatives, like, you know, the slideshow, which perhaps Janet could speak more to that about. We've both given numerous presentations to groups that just go to our website at Veterans for Peace and can, you know, request a presentation where we describe what the extent of the problem, or at least try to impress upon the extent of the problem. So it is a relatively new group within Veterans for Peace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Janet, I don't know if you were listening to Democracy Now! Just before this program, but your former colleague at Copink, Medea Benjamin, was on, talking about the terrible situation in Afghanistan, and of course the role that the U.S. Played in that, and is continuing to play by partly by denying this massive amount of money that the U.S. still holds. But she was also talking about this so-called Inflation Reduction Act, and including the climate component. So talk about your trajectory as being a longtime peace activist, and as I said, on the national staff of Code Pink for several years, and then now you're an associate member of Veterans for Peace and here in Portland.
Yes, thanks, Paul. I have been concerned since 1991 about the environmental and climate costs of war. And this was triggered by seeing on television a huge group of army vehicles going across the Kuwait border into Iraq. And as I looked at this huge phalanx of U.S. military vehicles invading another country, I thought about the emissions and the terrible environmental impacts, not only of that war, but of that particular action. And then, of course, the immense dollar cost that I was looking at just in that one image. So, of course, this, like many people, my climate crisis, which I have been aware of since 1988, when James Hansen of NASA testified to Congress. Of course, it wasn't called the climate crisis then. It was called global warming. I've been aware of it, and then that awareness sort of subsides as other crises and issues come to the fore, but it keeps coming back. And in 2019, as I was leaving my position in Code Pink and thinking of what next for me as an activist, I realized that I could no longer have this as a kind of tangential focus, but that I really needed to join with others in doing what I, you know, what I can to deal with and respond to the climate crisis. I've been a member of Veterans for Peace since 2011 and supported them long before that. So it seemed a natural fit for me to combine my concerns about U.S. foreign policy and wars with the climate crisis.
You know, you mentioned the terrible environmental costs of war, and specifically in Iraq, and it's interesting, maybe you want to comment on the recent settlement on the effect of the burn pits on only on the veterans, not on the actual the local residents that were also affected by that. But I mean, you know, then there's napalm, there's just the, you know, the exploding of bombs. I mean, war is just has incredible environmental impacts in and of itself.
That's right. What is less visible are the climate impacts, but those are increasingly dire as well. Since you mentioned burn pits, I just want to sort of fill in a bit about that. For a few years, I lived in the Coachella Valley in Southern California, and I was in Representative Raul Ruiz's district. He worked hard for years to get that legislation so that veterans exposed to burn pits could get adequate medical care, which they have not been getting, through the VA. My nephew, who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, is one of those many veterans who is now suffering lung damage because of his exposure to burn pits. So the Congress finally has approved that legislation. It was a hard struggle, and certainly credit goes to John Stewart as a rare celebrity who really stuck with this issue and was a powerful voice for veterans.
So this is, you know, lest that become just another, you know, media catchphrase. So burn pits, what exactly does that mean? Did that mean?
Yeah, right. Burn pits is the name for the practice of the U.S. military in wars and at foreign bases, but also in the United States, to dispose of solid waste in open burn pits. So everything from a broken computer to human feces to bloody uniforms, etc., is burned with absolutely no controls, no concern for the pollution. The smoke, of course, is highly toxic, and the people who live in the places where the military has these burn pits suffer, and they're not receiving adequate medical care either. So, this is in our slideshow, by the way. We do address this particular issue.
Before I direct my next question to Jim and also to you. Is that slideshow like available online? Or are you going to have any public presentations around the area?
Yeah, thanks for asking. There's a short version of our slideshow, which is on our website. I'll give the address for the website later on, so you can sort of preview it there. And then there's a place on our website to request a showing to your group. So far, we've shown it to about 80 groups around the country in the last year and a half, and it always generates interesting discussion, and people almost always say, oh, I never thought of that, or oh, I never knew that.
Mm-hmm. So this, I want to pick up on this issue of the military being able to, you know, burn things openly, just whatever they want. So actually something I didn't know about. I mean, I certainly heard about the burn pits, and I've heard of similar things, you know, in war zones, when I guess you could argue that a sense of urgency and, you know, expediency, whatever. But the fact that they're doing it on military bases or around the country is rather shocking. So this lack of any environmental controls is a huge, huge, huge issue, both in terms of what you're talking about here, just direct environmental impacts of the military, whether they're, you know, toxic waste, you know, in the water, like happened in, I believe, in North Carolina and many other places. There's huge health issues ongoing, and it's just so many. So there's that, but then there's lack of any attention to the actual fossil fuel use in fueling the climate crisis, even at the level of the highest negotiations, the Conference of the Parties at the United Nations, totally leaves the military out of it. It's just, it's the if there's an elephant in the room, that would be it. So Jim, want to talk about the lack of any environmental control seemingly on the military?
Well, I mean, some of the projects that I worked on when I was at the University of South Carolina was coming up with contamination maps of an air base in Beaufort, South Carolina. I mean, air bases notoriously, well, all bases are notoriously known for your screw-ups and contamination getting into the, you know, the environment. I mean, you have young people in control of all this stuff. You have the officer corps that just wants to get the mission done and screw everything else. And that has, you know, changed somewhat because people are becoming more aware. But, you know, the opening song by Buffy St. Marie, The War Racket, is really the key thing that we're trying to stress, in that we can't green the military or improve it environmentally. Fundamentally, the size is the problem. You know, people like Dr. Netta Crawford from the Cost of War Project, you know, have looked at you know, expenditures on the military, and that increases their emissions. And then you also have to consider that, let's say, if, you know, if the military makes up 1% of the U.S. emissions, which is about what it is, it's about, the last report was about 55 million metric tons. You would have to triple that to include the war industry that supports it. So, you know, all these tanks and aircraft and explosives and things like that all have to be manufactured, and it's at least twice as much emissions than what the direct military is emitting. And again, it's, you know, in that particular Buffy St. Marie song, it is the military is driving. We've been doing this for ever since the founding of the Republic, when we advanced across the nation, across to the west. The forts were to reinforce commercial development, and now we're doing this in the Pacific. You know, we have over between 750 and 800 bases. It's getting worse with the Ukraine war, all around the world, and that drives emissions, which, with our meeting with John Kerry's staff over a year ago, they confessed, we could have found that out by looking in the literature, but they confessed, well, all those emissions and all those bases are accredited to the host country. So we're not counting those. And there is a campaign with the Conflict and Environmental Observatory, a group in the UK, along with us, is to get the military to acknowledge their emissions, to report them to the UN, just like separate countries do, and also to come up with a declared reduction targets, which is known as the nationally declared contributions. Because the military, if it were a country, the U.S. military would rank in the top 50 countries for emissions. So, yes, the military should have a delineated reporting of their emissions and come up with a plans, the realistic plans with teeth behind them to make them do the reductions.
Janet, do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, well, I'd like to add a detail to what Jim was saying, currently the U.S. military has over 100,000 troops in Europe because of the war in Ukraine, between Russia and Ukraine, but certainly the U.S. and NATO were acting provocatively and still are in the lead up to that war breaking out. So that's a tremendous amount of emissions right there, of both moving those troops around and the supply lines to sustain them in Europe with no end date in sight.
Well, while you mentioned Ukraine, do either both of you care to comment, perhaps just a, you know, Veterans for Peace official position on the war in Ukraine? I know that that's something I've been also talking about, having some guests on that are going against the seeming consensus reality, starting from on top in the administration, that, you know, it's all bad, evil Putin and Russia that's doing this. The U.S. are always the good guys on the side of democracy and fairness and justice and all that. And any comments on the war in Ukraine and the United States' role?
Well, if I can follow up on that, and Jim may want to add to this, but in March, the Climate Crisis and Militarism Project put out a statement on the situation, which coincided with the release of the IPCC report, the third in a series on the global climate crisis situation. So I'll just read briefly from that. Mm-hmm. We strongly condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine and grieve for the human and environmental / climate devastation now occurring there. The USA also bears responsibility by stoking the Kremlin's security fears with the USA's bloated war and war preparation spending, which is 10 times Russia's military spending, combined with the United States' promotion of NATO's eastward expansion. At virtually the same time, the IPCC report, the third in a series, as I said, put out what was called an Atlas of Human Suffering and a damning indictment of failed climate leadership. Those are the words of UN Secretary General Guterres. So we call for an immediate ceasefire in Ukraine and a negotiated settlement and a reduction in the NATO and U.S. military posture in exchange for Russian guarantees to respect the right of self-governance of Ukraine and other neighboring nations, and really urgently the renegotiation of lapsed arms treaties, especially those relating to nuclear weapons and the positioning of nuclear weapons by the United States in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm. Jim,
I wanted to add to what Jenna was saying is that we really can't see how a prolonged conflict in Ukraine is going to help, addressing the climate crisis. It's hard to see cooperation between the United States and Russia. Of course, with the recent Pelosi trip to Taiwan, now the Chinese said they're not going to negotiate with the United States on climate issues. But just looking at the increased armament of the NATO countries, as Dr. Crawford pointed out, that generally speaking, the more you spend on the military, the higher your emissions are. So there was actually an informal analysis done by a Dutch economist that pointed out that the lower economic growth in Russia might actually decrease emissions. And that's the conclusion he came up with. But then I pointed out in a LinkedIn article that he didn't include, again, the war machine that's supporting the military. And instead of declining emissions are going up directly as a result of Ukraine because of all the, added war machine emissions that has to create all this armament that is used to fight and then also is destroyed. So it is a problem.
Indeed. Let me just reintroduce everybody. My name is Paul Rowland. This is a Wednesday talk radio here on KBOO Community Radio. Your voice for sanity, peace, and justice in this increasingly dangerous world. Just when you think it can't get any worse and more dangerous, things like the Ukraine war come along. My guests today are Jim Ryan, a retired research geologist and adjunct professor at the Department of Environmental Science and Geology at Wayne State University, who was arrested 2 weeks ago at a Veterans for Peace action against the role of the military in the climate crisis. And Janet Wheel, who is a longtime peace activist and associate member of Portland Veterans for Peace, once on the national staff of Code Pink, and now on, along with Jim, on the Veterans for Peace's Climate Crisis and Militarism Project. There are a number of links, some of which my guests mentioned that they would give you the addresses for, but there, I think, a number of them, maybe all of them, are on my program page at kboo.fm. That's Wednesday Talk Radio. This program is called Veterans Against War and Climate Catastrophe. We're actually halfway through the program. It's just after 8:30. I just wanted to check in with my board operator, Ty. Do we have a line open for phone callers? We should. Excellent. So hence, let me give the call-in number, 503-231-8187. I occasionally invite people who don't call in regularly to the program to step up, and perhaps those who are more regular callers just to step back for a little while, see if we can open up some space for maybe people who aren't as quick to the dialing buttons on their phones and may just need a little more space and time to call in. We definitely invite you all to join the conversation about militarism and the climate crisis, 503-231-8187. Just a plug for my next program. As I said, I'm really focusing on this issue a lot, just because I think even within the climate movement, I think that's, the next direction I'd like to go in before we get some guests, is to talk about how the climate movement itself has taken this issue. But next week, I've got Alejandro de la Garza, who's been one of the people really out front, surprisingly to me anyway, for Time Magazine. I don't know if that should be surprising, but he's been doing some of the more, I think, forthright, kind of just straightforward investigative reporting on this issue and climate change in general. And his, I don't know if it's the most recent, one of his recent articles, To Take Climate Change Seriously, the U.S. Military Needs to Shrink, which kind of just lays it out there, going along with what Jim was saying. So yeah, we do have a caller, but before we go to them, tackle that question. How has the climate movement dealt with this issue of the military's role? Whoever wants to go first. Janet.
Do you want to?
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago, I presented a slightly revised version of our climate crisis and militarism slideshow to an environmental coalition in Berkeley, California. There were about 80 people on that call. And I titled my somewhat personalized version of our slideshow, Breaking the Silence. The major environmental and climate organizations have been cowardly and evasive. And sometimes, especially Bill McKibben, I think, has been putting out a really detrimental statement, but others as well, that the U.S. military is part of the solution, at least in its current form, when it is nothing of the kind.
But what, by going green?
Yes, because the military and the Department of Defense, of course, for a long time, have been studying the impacts of climate crisis on military bases, especially naval bases on the Atlantic Ocean and inland bases that have been hammered by extreme weather events and flooding. So there was never any climate denialism in the Department of Defense. However, their point of view is, and they testified to this point to the House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis in 2021, give us more money. We have to protect our bases. The U.S. military is set up to protect the United States of America, not just its own assets, which certainly have been damaged by climate crisis exacerbated weather events. So I think that, you know, we just have to keep pushing. I'm really encouraged that over the past year and a half, as we've presented our slideshow almost 80 times around the country, especially 50.org, state and local groups have been very interested. We've presented quite a bit to them. And I'm also proud that my local Extinction Rebellion chapter here in Portland was the very first group that we presented to back in March of 2021. So I think on a state and local level, we're starting to have some impact. On the national level, as far as the major climate groups, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Fair enough. Well, we'll continue that. But first, it looks like we do have our first caller at 503-231-8187. And get your calls in sooner rather than later. Don't wait till the last 10 minutes if you can. Looks like we got Wade up. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. Generals and majors, are never too far from battlefields so glorious. Out in a world of their own.
Okay.
They'll never come down till once again victorious.
Okay, we're gonna have to cut you off if all you're gonna do is sing. Do you have a comment?
Okay, then it goes calling Jan.
Okay. Well, all right, sorry, Wade. Okay, well, that was an interesting musical interlude. If you have a question or comment for my guests today, Janet and Jim, 503-231-8187, that's the number to call up. And let's continue with this. I'm so glad to hear you so forthrightly, Janet, call out these major organizations for their neglect. I would go so far as to say complicity in allowing. I mean, not that we seem to have a lot of choice. The U.S. military has been the bully on the world stage for many decades now. Not the only bullies. Not to excuse any bully, but I think if you look at the role that the U.S. has had in creating the current global crisis, you'll have to admit that both U.S. weapons manufacturers and the Pentagon together have, let's just say, pushing the envelope on a global conflict. Mm-hmm. So, But things maybe are shifting a little bit because people are speaking up. I'm really heartened to hear that, you know, that you all have been doing this work for 2 years now with the Veterans for Peace. I guess it's maybe not a surprise that it's veterans who are really kind of taking the lead on this issue. And so that's all heartening. Jim, do you want to say anything about the issue of, you know, maybe talk about your fellow veterans, how have they been receiving this whole issue? Is there any, you know, are there fierce debates within Veterans for Peace? Is this something that's really gaining some traction? And maybe beyond Veterans for Peace, because that's really the big one. If we can get veterans more broadly to really look at this, that'd be a major achievement.
Well, before I go into that, I just wanted to follow up on what Jenna was saying. There, you know, in 2016, there was hardly any mention. And Jenna had mentioned Bill McKibben, you know, sort of blowing off, the military admissions for a while. But just last spring, the Extinction Rebellion, did team up or had a march or demonstrations in New York City. No war, no warming, no war was the theme of the event. But as far as veterans, so one thing that this demonstration that we did in Washington is we got a number of new recruits to the to Veterans for Peace, and they were, instead of just a lot of the Veterans for Peace people are of the my generation, which is the Vietnam era. I did not serve in Vietnam. I was in West Germany. But new people from the War on Terror that signed up. So obviously younger people are very concerned about climate change, and that's hopefully we're going to generate some more enthusiasm for Veterans for Peace. Now, this aspect, and I wanted to stress, I was on a webinar that was hosted by Code Pink called War is Not Green. It was on Hiroshima Day on August 8th. Todd Miller, who is the author of Storming the Wall, he pointed out that in, I think it was 2003, the Pentagon was planning on climate change and worried about mass migration from the global south and trying to buttress the defenses of the United States to keep these brown and black people, I'm not sure if that was how it was phrased, probably not, out of the country. And another person that was on that panel was Abby Martin. I was really struck by her comments. She is a documentary filmmaker. She's been working on a movie called Earth's Greatest Enemy, or the Earth's Greatest Threat, excuse me. And she had been to RIMPAC, which was the exercise in the Pacific, where she interviewed, she talked about RIMPAC, she talked about her discussions with state governors, she talked about her discussions with brass. And there is apparently no intention of shrinking the military in the future. In fact, as Janet pointed out, they want to enlarge it to, keep out to stabilize the threats that are going to be coming with the increasing climate crisis. Now, some people call this the armed lifeboat, to keep, armor the border, to keep people from the global south moving north, which will be a more hospitable place, the north will be, than in the south, because it's already out there now. And Christian nationalists certainly, I imagine, support this, would be typical Trump supporters to support this strategy. And I can certainly see this in white nationalism supporting this, but I somehow don't see Christianity supporting keeping people who are desperate, their families are starving to death due to climate crisis, out of our country. We have contributed over 20% of the historical emissions. Some commentators say that, based on your emissions, that's how many climate refugees, the percentage of climate refugees you should allow in. That would be true Christianity, even though I'm not a practicing Christian right now. And let me back up. Earth's Greatest Enemy is the movie that Abby Martin is working on.
Actually, I reached out to her through a website. I haven't heard back. Hope to have her on my program. I will at least start talking about that film. I've seen the trailer. I'm hoping to be able to get a version. I'm not sure if it's actually out yet or soon to be out, but that looks to be a very powerful film. So we'll be looking forward to hear more about that. Before we go to our next caller, John, 503-231-8187, we may have time for just a couple more. I just wanted to, I'm not sure, I don't think either of you really fleshed out this idea that the way that a lot of, you mentioned McKibben, the way that a lot of people are sort of pinning their hopes on the military to contribute to the solution, by, quote, going green, which basically just means, you know, electric vehicles, you know, all, solar panels on, you know, I don't know, you can imagine what the ideas are out there, which is basically just a cover, in my opinion, if I could be so bold, a cover for actually not dealing with the military's actual role. It's actual the size of the military and its role in fomenting conflict. And the other thing is, you know, the twin issues of war and climate change. It's not just climate change that are causing refugees. It's, you know, the continued impacts on of U.S. foreign policy and corporate policy on countries in, you know, Central Mexico and Central America. Anyway, just wanted to put that out there. I know I'm the talk show host, but I do have to speak my mind occasionally as well. So let's go to John, our next caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I want to get back to Ukraine. There's a power plant southeast part of Ukraine that's a large nuclear power plant, okay, and it's on in the front line of war. My question is, why isn't there's aggressive diplomatic intervention in this? Because what I heard on one of the radio programs is, like, if something happens to that power plant, it's going to be like five times worse than Chernobyl. So we're talking about not just a regional disaster, but a worldwide. And I just don't see why people just sit back and, you know, like, shake the dice. So I just want to make a little bit of opinion and what your opinion is, too. Thank you.
Either one of you?
Well, thanks, John, so much for bringing up, as you say, an issue that's sort of floating around on our media but is not up at the level of intense, you know, public attention and action as it should be. This is a bit outside of climate crisis and militarism project's scope of work, at least for right now. It's more something that groups that have been working on nuclear power and nuclear weapons issues for a long time are focusing on. But I would say that, yes, there should be a ceasefire in that area immediately. There should be international investigation teams going in, and call your member of Congress and both senators and say, I'm very concerned about this. What are you doing? You need to pay attention to this and get the word out generally among your friends and contacts.
Okay, well, thank you for calling. Oh, you're still there. Okay, well, that's John just left. I thought he was gone. But so, yeah, 503-231-8187. That's the number. Like I said, maybe one or two more callers. Get in your call now. Not in 5 minutes, so they can have time. My guests can have time to respond. I will briefly reintroduce. My name is Paul Rowland. I'm the weekly host of Wednesday Talk Radio, one of the 8 to 9 a.m. live talk programs here on your community radio station. And my guests today are Jim Ryan of Veterans for Peace, who was arrested 2 weeks ago in an action in Washington, D.C., protesting the role of the military in the climate catastrophe, which is right now upon us, as we see with the just horrific drought and heat waves racking Europe, among other parts of the globe. And of course, we are expected to get back up into the mid to upper 90s for the fourth time this year, third or fourth time here in Portland. It's, you know, last year was 116 degrees, but this year we've got four heat waves. Anyway, so yeah, it's here, folks. It's now. And my guests are doing something about it. Janet Wheel, our other guest, is a longtime peace activist and associate member of Portland Veterans for Peace. And they are with us for just another 10 minutes. So if you want to join the conversation, you might want to do it now, 503-231-8187. So yeah, I'll leave it up to you all to take this where you want to go. You mentioned you know, possible resources, how people can get involved and plugged in. That's one way to go. Otherwise, anything else you think our listeners need to know about? Jim?
Paul, yeah, I'd like to make a couple of comments. Well, there was a Time Magazine article, it was some months ago, where they analyzed, you know, what the military is doing to go green. And they actually visited a plant in the Detroit area that had received either one or two or a couple, you know, Bradley fighting vehicles, and their mission was to make it a hybrid, make it more green. They didn't mention how much money they spent, but they like increased the mileage on the Bradley fighting vehicle from like 0.8 miles per gallon to like 0.87 miles per gallon. So it's not exactly making it green. The conclusion of the article was the only way the Army could go green is to go get smaller. And, you know, therein lies the problem. And looking, you know, it's like this National Defense Authorization Act. You know, Biden put in, you know, a certain amount, and then Congress threw in more money. An article that I saw from a Navy point of view, they are authorized to get three more cruiser class something or others, more than what the Navy asked for. Meanwhile, we haven't sent any money to the UN, Green Climate Fund. And I would think personally that we could increase the security of United States citizens a lot more by helping developing countries and underdeveloped countries lower their emissions than buying three more cruiser class ships that the Navy doesn't even want. It's really idiotic how maybe it's driven, like the Buffy St. Marie song, by all the contractors. For instance, since 9/11, the five big contractors, you know, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, spent over $1 billion just lobbying alone. That could be what's driving the military expansion. It's just insanity.
I think you just might be onto something there.
Paul, I'd like to talk about a new initiative within Climate Crisis and Militarism Project that's quite an interesting new development, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's called Just Transition. It's a labor group within the Climate Crisis and Militarism Project. And the three areas of work are military contribution of the climate crisis into labor and climate circles. There are a number of groups and coalitions of labor organizers and activists who are focusing on climate and also jobs related to that. So it's bringing in the military issues. Another is adding military members and weapons producers into the groups to be covered by a just transition, which we need to keep pushing for on the federal and state level, and then bringing labor issues into what we're discussing and working on in Climate Crisis and Militarism Project, including adding slides about labor issues to our slideshow. So military members and people who work in the military-industrial complex need to be considered a worker class who deserve access to just transition. Many of these jobs, like creating plutonium pits, for example, are terrible jobs. Many workers get cancer. It's psychologically difficult often. They need clean, new jobs at good wages, just as much as coal miners or other workers.
And I thought we had another caller, but it looks like they left. We have time for one more caller at 503-231-8187. So maybe just quickly, that idea of just transition has been going around for a number of years now. I know there are groups in Portland, environmental justice groups, that are actively working on that. It's a major focus of theirs. And, you know, it's sort of implicitly or explicitly part of, you know, even this the bill that was just passed, the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, in terms of, you know, encouraging spending on the solar panels production in the United States. And so that's, you know, so those are the kind of jobs partly that we're talking about. But just maybe explain the concept of just transition briefly.
Just transition is the concept and the struggle to move our economy away from the, what I would call the gray old deal, the extractive and dirty jobs, coal mining and especially mountaintop removal coal mining as sort of exhibit A, but there are many other such jobs, into clean energy and into the care economy. So that we have an economy that is centered around real human needs and protection of the natural environment, and not destruction of both humans and the natural environment and the climate.
Well, let me, in the just a few minutes we have left, I want to throw open a perhaps a thorny question. I don't know, maybe not for either of you, that I've also been addressing. You know, as I got to this sort of a tipping point, I guess, with the, I guess it was the war in Ukraine that was sort of my tipping point that just maybe crystallized everything in terms of really seeing the central role that the military has played historically in developing the system that created the climate crisis and continues to fuel the crisis, and basically through its, you know, its fomenting of conflict and war sort of really prevents us from addressing it, as you said. Pelosi's, in my view, asinine visit to Taiwan. I mean, whatever one thinks of, you know, I think Taiwan is no longer the Taiwan of Chiang Kai-shek. I think the idea that it still is a province of China, I think, you know, personally, I think China needs to get over that, you know, but, you know, what is, my voice doesn't count. But whatever one thinks of all that, I mean, there's real serious international global crises that we're facing that we need to tackle, and that's just not helping. But anyway, so I guess the issue I want to talk about is, so, you know, parallel to the military, the sheer size and of the military and its global militaries, because certainly, you know, China has risen both its economy and its military to rival the United States now, which also is, you know, good for them, I guess, but not really helpful to resolve any of the crises. So parallel to that is the hyper-expansionist nature of the capitalist global economy. I mean, is it possible to address these things while having a capitalist economy? I'll just put it right out, if either of you want to tackle that one.
I want to give a plug for David Vine, who has written a book called The United States of War. In a correspondence with him after finishing the book, I considered it a good psychoanalysis of the United States and how it expanded. I mentioned this earlier. From the earliest times, even before the Revolution, expanding out west and continuing to expand. Like I said, these bases or forts in the old days were hubs of commercial activity to protect the local commercial activity. And I really highly recommend folks reading that. It really gives a psychoanalysis of the crazy state of what the United States is and this world power, this empire that's trying to maintain its grip over the world.
Okay,
I really recommend
Janet, that. You have the last word, because we got to close out in about 30 seconds to a minute.
Okay, so we put out a statement to Taiwan. The Climate Crisis and Militarism Project of Veterans for Peace denounces House Speaker Pelosi's provocative trip to Taiwan. We call on the White House and State Department to apologize to China for unnecessarily escalating tension in the Asia-Pacific region. The cost of that, the dollar cost of that trip, was $90 million for military escort, including a military jet and many other expenses. It also produced countless metric tons of completely unnecessary greenhouse gas emissions.
Indeed. Well, that sometimes we just have to look at the nuts and bolts of these things, the reality, because that's what's coming at us, is the reality of vast tonnage of greenhouse gases accumulating in our atmosphere that are just throwing things totally haywire. So thank you so much, Jim and Janet. Really appreciate your being on with me today.
Thanks for your work, Paul.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, we got to go out. Maybe we'll have another snippet of Buffy St. Marie. Thanks, Ty, for being on the board. Thanks for everybody who called. Bye, everybody.
Slick, you investors in hate, you Saddams and you Bushes, you Bin Ladens and snakes, you billionaire bullies, you're a globalized curse. You put war on the masses and then you clean out the purse, and that's how it's done. War after war, you old feudal parasites, you just sacrifice the poor. You got the cutting-edge weapons, but your scam's still the same as it's been since the Romans. Yo, it's the Patriot game. Yo, that's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. You twisters.